The idea would have come about through, I suppose, just looking out from the doors or the windows of the cathedral and seeing that it's in the heart of the old city, that the contemporary city is now, I think, the largest conurbation, the largest inhabited urban area in Ireland. And also people commute from up to 11 counties, I think, to come in now to Ireland. So it's actually a place where a lot of people are in and out. And it's to make the connection between the church and the world outside. And we felt that the Church of Ireland is a small minority. We find ourselves as a custodian of Christ Church Cathedral in the heart of the Viking part of the city. So we wanted to connect with those who are part of other Christian traditions and also people who are lay people who do work in other contexts which have nothing in the first instance to do with the church. And so I think if you look at the people concerned, one is Mary McAleese, who is an academic, a politician, a former president of Ireland, a person of international contribution on issues of rights and justice. The other person, Jim Lucy, is the clinical director of St. Patrick's Hospital, which is a stone's throw away from us. But he's somebody who has done significant work in destigmatizing mental illness. And that, I think, is a really important contribution as well. So there are people who go about their daily work, and we, in a sense, want them to be part of who we understand ourselves to be.
And did you approach them, or did you put it out that you were interested in having this position and they got in touch with you?
What happened was that we got permission from the General Synod of the Church of Ireland in May 2017 to proceed with two lay and two ecumenical canons, and then the choice would have been between the Dean and me. That's just the way it works.
Okay. And, I mean, of course, Mary McAleese is on the list, and she's obviously the most well-known person that you have on your list. And she's also well-known for having some controversies in the past in terms of receiving communion at Church of Ireland services. So it seems quite symbolic that she would be one of the choices.
Well, I suppose, you know, Mary McAleese is more than able to speak for and stand up for herself, and my understanding of her is she would have very good reasons for doing what she did in her own time and in her own day. Our concern is not, as it were, to gather in people of controversy, and I wouldn't have seen her in that way. I would have seen her as somebody who, over the time of her presidency, made a tremendous effort to make her presidency that of the island of Ireland without in any way offending people in Northern Ireland. She was tremendously open, interested and gracious. And we need to go back to the fact that if you go back 20 years, things were probably more frozen as denominations related to one another. Things were probably coming to a climax and moving towards peace in Northern Ireland. So Ireland was a different place, and someone, I think, of that intellect and warmth and wisdom contributed to who we have become, as well as making what I would consider to be principled contributions at the time. My thinking around probably what she did 20 years ago was that she wanted to identify herself in relation to something that mattered to people in Ireland, which was faith, by attending and participating in acts of worship in a range of faiths, one of which would have been the Church of Ireland.
And, I mean, of course, a lot of people now involved with church would say that the divide is no longer really between Catholics and Protestants. It's really between maybe people of faith and people of no faith.
I think that's a reasonable thing to say. I would never deny to anybody their entitlement, as it were, to believe in their own way and not to believe in things in which I believe. I also think that there still is a kind of substratum of faith expectation in a lot of Irish people. But I think you're quite right, the division is now stronger between people who decided that the architecture of faith is not for them and people for whom it is. So I suppose within our context, we have the lay canons who are people of significance in the world beyond the church. And then we have the ecumenical canons and the way they've worked out. I mean, we're in the 500th anniversary of the Reformation. So one of these people is a member of the Jesuit order and the other is a Presbyterian. So you have, as it were, two sort of successors to Luther. You have the Jesuits and then you have the Calvinists, Presbyterianism taking its root from Calvin. So that I suppose is another side of what we're doing. But all of these people I think are representative first and foremost of what they themselves represent, and they come to us with many gifts and we want to give them a chance to use them.
And that brings me on to the next question. What exactly will they and won't they be able to do?
Well, I suppose what they... let's start with the positive. What they will be able to do is that they will be able to take their full part in the life of the cathedral as other canons would. That manifests itself in two things. One is a seat and the other is a voice. What do I mean by that? That you actually sit and you are able to contribute, as it were, to the shape and the development of the cathedral. A voice, you're allowed to speak, you're allowed to interpret scripture, you're allowed to engage in that sort of way. My hope, and the way in which the Dean and I kind of work this out, would be the following. That in the same way as other canons would speak or preach on a Sunday, these people would be given the same opportunity. Another thing which is, I think, new to what we're doing, if, as part of their work and life, there was something they wanted to bring to the cathedral or have an act of worship for that, they're more than welcome to do that. And then finally, that on a regular basis, we haven't worked out exactly what, but I'd like to think that at least twice in their five-year tenure, the four of them together would have an evening, a sort of colloquium or forum, where they would take a contemporary issue and that would be open to everybody and would be held in the cathedral. So they would have a voice like that where they would discuss something of contemporary interest and importance and there would be a response and interaction from the floor.
And is this perhaps a way of the future? Because churches in general are maybe suffering a loss of vocations. So one solution, certainly in the Catholic Church, has been to ordain married men as deacons. Perhaps a solution for the Church of Ireland is the introduction of these canons.
Well, I think the advantage of them is that it gives a fresh voice in an institutional setting. People who mightn't have had the chance or mightn't have felt that they had the authority to speak in this sort of way will now have this opportunity. What we have tried to do is to give the same voice to those who are ordained in their own tradition and to those who are lay people. And in fact, if you were to go back through the recent archive of the cathedral, one of these people, that is David Tuohy, who's a Jesuit, he led the retreat and preached at an ordination in the cathedral. And Mary McAleese also spoke at an ordination. And it was really powerful to see Church of Ireland ordinands, as it were, hearing the exposition of a committed, theologically nuanced lay woman talking to them as they were going into the priesthood. And that was really, really important.